You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour,
the home of cycling with character.
Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyans Run, stage 21. Today we are in Madrid.
Well, welcome to Madrid and the 21st and final stage of the Vuelta a España. Largely a circuit race around the city streets here in Madrid, ending with a bunch sprint. In this final episode, we're going to hear lots of riders' reactions to what's gone on the last 3 weeks, our highlights. We'll hear from the coach at Jumbo Visma, the team of the overall winner, Primož Roglič, of course. We're going to catch up with Daniel Freeb in the next part and get his thoughts on the race, and Orla Shinoui after that. So it's a packed episode as ever, but to run through what happened today to finish things off at the Vuelta, the stage was won after great teamwork yet again from De Koenig Quickstep by their sprinter Fabio Jakobsen. His second stage win, he just out-sprinted Sam Bennett of Bora Hansgrohe with a new name in the top three, Zyman Sanyok. Up there for CCC. They haven't had too many results at this Vuelta, but third on this final stage for him. And overall, of course, no changes. Primož Roglič was the winner, 2 minutes 16 ahead of Alejandro Valverde, with Tadej Pogacar in third at 2:38. Points winner, Primož Roglič ahead of Tadej Pogacar. Best young rider, hotly contested between Pogacar and Miguel Angel Lopez, with James Knox third, but Pogacar goes home with the white jersey. King of the Mountains, in the end, Geoffrey Bouchard, the AG2R rider who we saw on the attack a lot, formerly worked in Decathlon, we've discovered during this Vuelta, but he deposed Angel Madrazo, who wore the polka dot jersey for a long time. But Bouchard means that, well, he ensures that AG2R don't go home empty-handed. They have the King of the Mountains from the Vuelta. Top team, who else but Movistar, just ahead of Astana. It was a sprint, as we expected. There was a breakaway today. Dani Martinez, the Colombian on EF Education First, and Diego Rubio on Burgos BH, they were away for a long time. Not really a stage that suited Martinez in particular, but they were out there for a long time on their own. And it was mainly De Koenig Quickstep that brought them back. That man, Tim de Klerk, yet again spending a lot of time on the front. And the stage winner from a few days ago, Remy Cavagna, did a monstrous turn in the last few kilometres, keeping everything together and helping to set it up for Jakobsen.
So far it's been, maybe it's been one of the most enjoyable. I mean, the Giro the first time I did it was so great because I was able to be in the race every day. But I've loved the nature of this race because we've raced every day.
Ben O'Connor, Team Dimension Data. Very young Australian, Ben O'Connor. Very promising talent, but he's had quite a few setbacks since he burst onto the scene. So I wanted to find out how his Vuelta had gone.
There's been no mediocre days at all. So I can be pretty proud that I've actually taken a step to try and change how I race, because I like taking things on, but I never really was able to, and I wasn't actually smart enough or good enough to make the breaks. So yeah, I've enjoyed this, and maybe that's what I'll do next year. I don't know. It will just come down to how I can develop again. And I mean, I think it's because it came as such a surprise and came so easy last year that I expected that that's just kind of what happened. And I was like, no, I can always be like that. But in reality, it's not. I think because I was able to have a lot of things go well for me earlier as I started riding, with the progression from teams to here to the Giro to winning races. So I think this has probably been the first hurdle. So that's why it's been actually nice to kind of change the mentality a little bit, because I never really had any strife before.
Carl Fredrik Hagen, Lotto Soudal, one of the revelations of the race. In his first Grand Tour, he finished 8th overall. Congratulations. Norway has maybe a Grand Tour rider at last.
Oh, thank you. It's a little bit more than I expected. Three super hard weeks of racing, but I try to keep focus every day, take day by day, step by step, and with a good sports directors, a good team, all the staff members, good teammates, and good legs, then it is possible. Oh, I learned a lot. It's difficult to say everything, but I know now that I can do 3 weeks of hard racing well. I recover fast. I can climb with the best climbers in the world. I learned a lot of recovery, mental things, a lot. We had here absolutely not a GC team. We were here with breakaway specialists, and my goal before the Vuelta was to take day by day and see how far I can go in the GC. And I said before that my main goal was maybe top 20 if everything was super nice, and also to finish the Vuelta. So yeah, the last week I've not been on the Twitter, and I tried to close everything outside and just focusing on the race. So now it's after tomorrow, it's time to read some messages and say thanks for all kind messages.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thanks very much to Rafa for being our title sponsor and helping us cover our third Grand Tour of the season. How many years have we been doing all three Grand Tours? This is our third year of doing the hat trick, Daniel.
I'm not sure, Rich. I was thinking earlier, how many consecutive Grand Tours? How long is it since I missed a Grand Tour? I think 2015 Vuelta was the last one I didn't cover.
Yeah, ditto. So thanks very much, Rafa. We really appreciate their long-standing support. Daniel, I know you keep your cards close to your chest on this. When does the wine glass rating happen?
I don't do it for the Vuelta.
All right, okay. If you were to do it, how many wine glasses?
Well, the thing is, I feel like I lack the historical context for the Vuelta in order to do it for the Vuelta, because I, you know, haven't watched every stage of every Vuelta going back, so, you know, 25 years. I haven't for the Giro and the Tour, but I've got a better grasp of those races. Taking it in isolation, I'd probably give it, I gave the Tour de France a four, I think. And I would say this is similar in a very different way, similar level in a very, very different way. For reasons we discussed yesterday, it's been action-packed. What's it lacked? It's like characters, I would say, to a certain extent. The course I've quite enjoyed, but it's been quite sort of disorienting to have the sort of mountain stages scattered so sort of evenly throughout the 3 weeks. In terms of, I always sort of take into account the places a race visits, the story it tells in terms of landscapes and geography. The start is not on the Costa Blanca. I know we got in trouble for this before, but it's not my favourite part of Spain, or certainly some of the places that the race visited, not my favourite part of Spain. But, you know, there have been some great stories. The emergence of Pogacar, Pog. I think Roglic has been a good story. He's the sort of Tonkov-esque way in which he's ridden and also negotiated, also got through his press conferences, which has been criticised heavily in the Spanish
media. You think Tonkov's press conferences were much better back in the day?
I think they were very, very similar. Very similar.
Just before you move on, Daniel, while you mentioned the start all the way back in Benidorm, I keep meaning to mention this, but we had an email from Rob Gregg who sent us a link to... he also signs off friend of the podcast, still no mention, Rob. Well, thanks for being a friend of the podcast, Rob. He sent us a link to a BBC podcast about the whole Benidorm story and the story of Pedro Zaragoza, who rode on his Vespa to Madrid to see General Franco and asked for permission for bikinis to be worn in Benidorm. And that really paved the way for Benidorm to become the place it is now. He died only quite recently, the mayor of Benidorm, the former mayor of Benidorm. But there was some interesting, fascinating details in that program about how the way he won Franco's support for this was by reassuring him that although the women would wear bikinis, there'd be zero tolerance of rude language. So you're allowed to say...
Or heavy petting or anything like that.
Yeah, you're allowed to say nice figure. but you weren't allowed to be say or something like that. I really like your belly button was the example he used in the program. So, you know, interesting, subtle, kind of nuanced program about the history of Benidorm and how it became the wonderful place that it is today. moving on.
Well, the race did move on from there, didn't it? And we went north. I really enjoyed, in terms of we're talking destinations, landscapes, I really enjoyed yesterday the Plataforma de Gredos. The slightly sour note as far as the public was concerned was that they couldn't really get to the finish. It was great for us, and it made the race, the pics of the race look very wild, which is what it seemed. It was bike racing and Grand Tour racing kind of stripped down into its sort of wildest, purest form. So I really enjoyed that, and we always love going to Asturias, Cantabria. Obviously, plenty of people will be familiar with those names of the regions, but I think what would surprise people if they went to those regions is the sort of diversity and how landscapes change, languages change, and the food to an extent changes as you move through those northern regions, or sort of across towards Galicia on the western edge, or vice versa, back towards the Basque Country.
It's the weather, isn't it, up there that makes it quite tricky, because it can rain and be cold in July and quite warm in December. It's unpredictable, or its unpredictability is quite predictable. And Po seems a long time ago, doesn't it? But that time trial there really laid the foundations for Rog's win, and it might have been a closer race and a more interesting race perhaps without that 36-kilometer time trial.
Yeah, I was actually looking at the winning margins in major tours earlier today, and you know, this has been a very pronounced trend over the last few years that they are becoming closer and closer for affairs. And the last time someone won a major tour by more than 4 minutes was 2016. Chris Froome won the Tour de France by 4 minutes and 5 seconds, I think, from Romain Bardet. But even that was a bit of an anomaly. But if you go back and look at sort of the late noughties, you had Ivan Basso winning the Giro. I just saw him actually, the blueberry farmer. Yeah, slightly dubiously winning, well, very dubiously winning the 2006 Giro d'Italia. Couldn't really get more dubious, but he kept that title, and that was by, I think, 9 minutes. And third place Gilberto Simoni was 11 minutes. But that's the thing of the past, and the last three or four seasons, pretty much everyone has been under a minute and something, or just over 2 minutes.
But is that, Daniel, because the competition here has not been at the same level as recent Giros and Tours? I mean, he's beaten 39-year-old Alejandro Valverde. Nairo Quintana is not really at his best. A Lopez who sort of disappoints quite consistently. And Pogacar, in the end, being the strong guy. But it's difficult to measure him as well, because I do feel that perhaps Roglic has been the only kind of A-list Grand Tour contender who's really been here in the end.
Yeah, possibly. You also, I suppose, could look at the team that Jumbo-Visma brought here, and it was stronger than what they brought to the Giro, but they lost two men along the way, and you know, they weren't put under as much pressure as they probably should have been. So, you know, in terms of like the fierceness of the competition, Ineos were also missing in action, so that sort of takes a dimension away, I suppose, from the GC battle. And so I think that's probably a fair argument to say that of the three Grand Tours this year, it was probably the weakest. I noticed yesterday, I saw some figures for the VAM figures, which is basically a measure of climbing speed, for yesterday's stage. They were pretty low, actually. And that's comforting in a way. It bears out just how much fatigue there is, not just at this point of the race, but at this point of the season. It was, you know, they're quite significantly down, the climbing figures, compared to the Giro and the Tour.
Two things I want to talk about briefly before you go. Hugely significant, this win for Jumbo-Visma. You know, just as it was for Mitchelton Scott last year, and you know, they've kind of had a disappointing season on the back of Simon Yates' win here at the Vuelta last year. But you do feel that for Jumbo-Visma, this is kind of the start of the journey in a way.
Yeah, and you feel that they've really picked up, well, they're picking up belief, momentum, and they've clearly, you know, they've assembled some very good guys behind the scenes, sports scientists. But it's taken a while. I mean, Marijn Zeeman, they took him from
Sunweb,
Giant Shimano, whatever it was called then. That was a few years ago now, and he was extremely highly rated at the time. But for his input and the input of other specialists they brought in for their work to bear fruit, it's taken 3 or 4 seasons.
Well, if you want to hear more from Marijn Zeeman, I recommend our friend special on Jumbo Visma. We hear a lot from him in there. I spent the day with him in the car, and a really fascinating guy. And what he'd said in particular about Stephen Kruijswijk was really interesting, I thought. The other thing I want to talk to you about, Daniel, is Pogge. Is this his ride here, third overall, and his win yesterday? And we probably didn't give it enough credit last night. There were two Movistar riders chasing hard after him yesterday in the valley between the climbs, and they weren't making any inroads at all. I thought that was really impressive. I mean, he was strong at the end of this race. When, at 20 years old, at the start of the Vuelta, I was wondering how far into the race he would go.
I think that's the important point, Rich, that not only has he won 3 stages, he didn't win them by being, a sort of sensational climber that took the race by storm in the first week and then faded. He's done it in the hardest part of the race, the biggest, the sort of most exacting testing ground, which is the back end of the race, and I think that says everything about his powers of recovery.
Bernal got a problem?
Big old problem. Say he's got a problem. I think Movistar have got a problem. I mean, that's probably stating the obvious, but I think I mentioned my cozy chat with Eusebio Unthaway, the manager, a few days ago. And with Soler and Mas as the leaders next year, I think Mas will is going to be a solid option for them as a leader in Grand Tours. Soler, I'm not convinced by. He's a bit of a sort of Spanish Hugh Carthy. He's the jawbreaker. He's brilliant at doing a lot of he's brilliant at doing some serious damage in a team role over a few kilometres. But I'm not convinced, although he's going to finish in the top 10 here, that he's quite ready to not lead them to the extent and in the way that Quintana and Valverde and Landa have led them this year.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for your input to our Vuelta coverage.
Thanks. That sounded a bit backhanded.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
I might take that out.
No, thank you, Rich. Enjoyed it. Thanks for the season. Been a great season.
Worlds, here we come. Don't forget the world. Well, Daniel and I were talking about Marijn Zeeman, the coach at Jumbo-Visma, who featured, as I mentioned earlier, in our friend special at the start of the year, all about that team. At finish, as they were celebrating in their red polo shirts Primoz Roglic's win, I spoke to Zeeman to find out what this meant and what their plans are for next year, with Tom Dumoulin joining the team, of course. First Grand Tour win in your current guise, what does this mean?
Yeah, amazing feeling. For us, it's the first time, so it was a finishing on the podium with Primoz and Stevie in the Giro and the Tour was already big. Winning, it's another step, and it's a new situation for us, and it's just an amazing feeling. Yeah,
it's been a long-term project, hasn't it, to get to this point?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think especially we started it in 2016, and I think we have a very, very good group of people, smart people, hardworking people, passionate people, and. And then a fantastic group of riders, of course. Primoz is a big talent, Dylan, Stevie, so we had the qualities, and we developed them and looked around how good teams were doing things, and now we are here.
What's been the most satisfying thing about this Vuelta?
Overcoming bad situations and bad luck, controlling the race when it was very, very hard. I mean, like yesterday, the first 100 kilometers was crazy. But there were only 3 teams racing, Astana, Movistar and we. And that we were able to control the race, and then also to keep Astana and Movistar in the peloton and not in the front, like, so that there could be a dangerous situation for us. That, of course, it's big, and we're proud of that. Yeah.
And then Tom Dumoulin next year, you know him quite well, I guess. How is he going to fit into this team?
I think he will fit in very well, but obviously, he's new, and like every new guy has to settle and find his place. But Tom is fantastic rider, but also a person who understands that. And yeah, we're going to use the winter for that, but we are very, very happy that he's joining us.
Do you think it will be a problem for him having almost missed a season of racing? Will it take him a while, do you think, to get back up to his level?
Yeah. That's I think that's all with all the riders who are seriously injured. That will take time, but he will get that time with us. And first we have to see how far he is exactly and where we can start. But then it will come, and step by step we'll see that he will get him back on his old level, and hopefully even a little bit better. Yeah.
And who will lead the team at the Tour de France?
Yeah. Well, we have to see that. So now, first I enjoy the party, and then I know that the winter is going to be hard, also especially for me, because I have to, together with all the coaches, have to make a good plan and make a good strategy. So that's too early now. Yeah.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Cheers, Jonathan.
All right.
Bottle still intact. Cheers, Jonathan. Now listen. How does the offer of free beer sound to you?
That sounds fantastic, Richard.
That, by the way, is Jonathan Rowe, the man behind the machine, the man who keeps the wheels of the cycling podcast turning. And he's joined me in Madrid. And we're here to tell you that Beer 52, supporting this episode of our Vuelta coverage, are offering you a free case of beer for just £4.95 to cover the postage. If you sign up for this within the next 2 weeks, you'll even get two extra free beers. So that's a total of 10 beers for just £4.95. Each month, Beer 52 deliver a case with a different theme. Themes have ranged from Germany to Korea, Norway to South Africa, and California to Finland. Though this month's case of beer, the theme is Boston, Massachusetts. As an independent British company, Beer 52 are also passionate about the UK craft beer scene, so you get a lot of British beers in there as well. And they're all types: wheat, blonde, dark. In the latest box, there is a chocolate stout. What kind of beer do you like, Jonathan?
I'm quite boring. Well, for a time I didn't drink. I drank alcohol-free wheat beers. Like,
that's not good.
Franziskaner is one of my favourites, and there was a nice Erdinger one as well. But otherwise, I mean, here we're sampling a Mahu, is it? Cinco Estrellas, which is, you know, it's very tasty. It's been a hot day, a bit humid today, and it's hitting the spot. Yeah.
Local beer. We passed the brewery the other day. We mentioned that in the podcast, actually. And I'm sure it will feature in our creative beer from Beer 52 at some point. I'm a customer and I can recommend it. It's good to expand your palate, expand your range of beers, and learn about a few new beers from different parts of the world. So if you fancy taking advantage of this offer, go to beer52.com/cycling to get your first case of eight beers for free. And don't forget, if you sign up in the next 2 weeks, you can get an extra two beers for free. That's at beer52.com/cycling. beer52.com/cycling. BWER and the numbers 5and2.com/cycling.
The Echelon stage was for sure. I think one thing that I will never experience again in my life, 220k full gas.
Tim de Klerk, De Koning Quick Step.
From the gun, actually, I think that was an amazing stage, and every team victory is nice for sure when you contribute to it. But yeah, that one was really special.
Hannah Troop, the press officer at EF Education First.
Of course, when we won the other day.
Kilrainen, Trek Segafredo.
The finish, being done.
Lawson Craddock, EF Education First.
Favorite moment of this Vuelta? Probably this morning when I got to see my family for the first time in a while, so.
Patrick Lefebvre, the boss at De Koning Quickstep.
Oh, of course, the Echelon stage, but Philippe Gilbert wins. It was really a team demonstration on the highest level.
Orla, we're walking to the finish line. That's a very good place for breakfast, by the way, Mallorca Bar.
So is where we've just been for breakfast, though. I'd highly recommend that.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been visiting a friend in Madrid, your old colleague.
Yeah, my old colleague, best friend, Leah. and our wonderful chef husband Dan, and it's their daughter's, my goddaughter's birthday today, so we had a birthday brunch. It was lovely.
Are we singing happy birthday?
I'm trying to sing it in Spanish, something cumpleaños.
Ola, this has been your first Vuelta, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been, my first full one, yep.
What are your impressions? What have been your impressions?
I've really, really loved it. A lot of it has felt actually like the holiday Grand Tour, to be honest. I think after the intensity of the Tour de France, it is a welcome relief. It's so much more intimate and smaller, and access is so easy. I've just really, really enjoyed it. It's been a joy to travel around Spain, to see parts of the country. This is what we love about cycling anyway. See parts of the country that you've never really thought much about or sometimes even heard of. And discovering brand new places. I've been calling my husband saying, right, we're taking the camper van here. We're going to plan a holiday there. I've just really, really enjoyed it. It's been wonderful. And the racing itself has been the icing on the cake. I mean, obviously, that's what we're here for. That should be the cake, I guess.
Yeah.
It's been good.
The other stuff is icing.
The good cake and good icing. It's been... all around a wonderful delight.
Highlight?
Oh.
Could be racing, it could be a meal, it could be a place. Could be a rider.
Probably, can I say dancing in Burgos? Karaoke in Oviedo. Rider for me has probably been James Knox. Just because it's the first time we've seen him complete a Grand Tour, I think a lot of people, we've talked about him a lot, and obviously you've had him in the podcast a lot, but there's an awful lot about his Grand Tour, I think, that encapsulates what Grand Tour riding, what cycling really is all about, and the highs and the lows, battling through adversity, and coming out the other end, you would imagine, much stronger for it. So I would say he's actually my rider of the race.
What's been interesting has been in sort of following his progress through the diary in particular. From our point of view, you know, the rider who finishes 9th, 10th, 11th, we're almost a bit condescending sometimes, you know, the whole Al Azubeldia thing, because if you are riding 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, you have often, it's a reward for consistency, and it means that you've perhaps not been at the front or on the attack all that much. But we've had a real sense, he'll finish 11th in Madrid here, but we've been taken inside his race, and we've kind of been able to experience and have a real insight of what it's like just to battle every day, you know, to finish up there. And I think that's been a really interesting insight, as I say, into somebody's race, and whose race we might not have been all that aware of had we not been following him so closely.
And I was listening to the podcast, yesterday's podcast this morning, and Daniel talking about Philippe Gilbert basically just doing his daub with James Knox and helping him up the climbs yesterday. But to me, and he's right, you know, he is just being a professional, but isn't that the beauty of cycling, that you can see what you're making funny faces?
Because Daniel and I carried on that conversation after we'd been recording. No. No, because I took issue with what he said, actually, because I think, I think we should actually, you know, the phrase just doing his job, just being a professional, I mean, these are things that we should actually celebrate and praise where necessary, because, yeah, he is doing his job, he is being professional, but, you know, he's doing it with real class and dedication, and he doesn't need to, nobody would care if he didn't, you know, he's leaving that team, they're not going to be teammates next year. Philippe Gilbert could easily have got away with having a bad day riding in the Gruppetto, or even riding his own race, frankly. Nobody really, there wouldn't have been any consequences for him.
And absolutely no one would have noticed that, you know. And we only noticed what he was.
His team might have noticed, but that would be it.
But they wouldn't have said to the wider world, and no. It wouldn't have affected his chances next year. Hey, salut! So that's one of our crew walking past. And it is, as I was listening to that, I thought you can't really dispute in a way what Daniel was saying. But that's part of the beauty of the sport. You don't get other sports where a star of the sport then puts himself completely at the service of another rider on one of the toughest days of the race. And I think that kind of thing should be celebrated, because that's celebrating cycling, really.
It's like Messi going in goal, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a bit little for goal, but yeah, could be like Messi going in goal. A bit more human growth hormone, he could make it.
Oh, controversial.
No, it's not controversial. No. He's had it for his, whatever his condition is. He's had it since he was about 12.
Okay. Finally, Orla, any lowlights? Anything that's left you feeling underwhelmed, less than enamoured by the Vuelta, or any aspect of it?
Not really. I think some of the organisation sometimes for journalists trying to cover it has been a real challenge. Because it's not as big, you know, the tour, everything is set up well in advance. There have been days where we've been sort of stuck trying to get up a mountain for maybe 2 hours, which is quite tedious.
No portaloos at the top of a mountain?
No portaloos at the top of one particular mountain, which really, really wound me up. And we had to fight hard that day to get a portaloo, which really is unacceptable. I mean, we had one of my colleagues from Dutch Eurosport is pregnant. There was nowhere to hide behind up in that bald mountain top, so that would have been a bit... fun, but mostly it's been brilliant. And actually one of my other highlights was a day that maybe would have been a huge challenge, should have been a huge challenge, but Andorra, where we had thunder, lightning, hailstorms. We all had to get the cable car up the mountain and back down again. But the atmosphere on that day was, again, one thing that gives me even, I've got goosebumps even talking about it, that I love, love, love about cycling. And we're all standing there in the queue and you see like Nairo Quintana going through with his bike to get on the cable car first. And it's that you're cheek by jowl with all the stars of the sport. And I felt like everybody was sort of in that together. I loved it. I loved it. It was freezing. It was hard. It was brilliant.
This Vuelta has seen we've learned about Narrow Man, the East London courier, haven't we? With pictures snapped at the top of another man. Maybe he had a delivery.
Maybe we did, yeah. DHL, he was doing a quick side job, maybe.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Orla.
Oh, it's been a joy. Thank you for having me.
Right now, it's over. It's done. Best moment.
Nick Schultz, our diarist, Mitchelton Scott.
I don't know, favourite moment. Hard to pinpoint. I don't know, maybe making a breakaway after trying for 2.5 weeks. But instant regret once I was up there, it was too hard. But overall, it was a pretty good race. It's hard to pinpoint one moment because it was just so hard the whole way. So it's just a pretty pleasant feeling riding into Madrid. Yeah, that's up there.
Sepp Kuss of the winner's team, Jumbo Visma.
Oh man, it all seems so distant if I had tried to think a few weeks ago, but honestly the hamburgers we had last night were pretty, it was a pretty good moment.
Sam Bewley, Mitchelton Scott.
Favourite moment of the Vuelta, I think it's probably always Madrid stage. Yeah, it's pretty cool, always good atmosphere, the weather held out luckily, good circuit, it's a nice way to end.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. And you can get your 25% off still with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Very grateful to Science and Sport for their support of what we do. Now, let's hear from some more riders. Our diarists, Nick Schultz and James Knox. Nick was quick to send his diary in as soon as he got on the bus. James took a little bit longer to get back to the bus. I think he was celebrating the stage win as well. Big hugs for Patrick Lefebvre when he did get back to the bus. Let's hear their final installments now. Nick Schultz and James Knox.
Stage 21, done and dusted. Happy to be over the line here. Not much to report on today, just a really nice relaxing ride into Madrid. Get to chat with friends, just sort of debrief on the 3 weeks that was. And then you hit that circuit and it's a lung-busting hour. Now we're just on the bus, we've cracked a few drinks and we're about to head back to the hotel where we're going to go and have dinner and celebrate the 3 weeks. Yeah, cheers. Thanks for listening for the 3 weeks and yeah, might do this again sometime.
Final diary. Thought I'd give you the full effect. In the mix, in the thick of it on the bus. Feeling a few drinks already. 3 weeks over. Real relief. It's been such a long time. Wow. Really, really happy to be finished. Yeah. And to finish it with a victory. Bit lost for words. Been amazing. All the ups and downs. Special team, and yeah, really proud to be a part of this team for here. Feel like we've taken the race on whenever we could. and can be really proud of ourselves. I'm really proud of myself. Never expected to be in this position after 3 weeks, so close to a top 10. Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. I think I'll enjoy tonight. Heading back to the hotel, shower, change, nice restaurant, some more drinks. It feels like the season's ending right now. Still got a couple more races to go, but we won't worry about that. And just enjoy tonight first. Celebrate 5 stage victories and my effort at GC. You know, it wasn't really the ambition, but turned out to be quite a nice little project in the end. And I'm really, really can't put to words how much it means to me, how like, the guys supported me all the way to the end. So 11th in a Grand Tour, I don't think that's been done by many British guys. First Cumbrian to finish a Grand Tour, I'll take that. I really, really take that.
I think there's a lot of them, but...
Will Barta riding his first Grand Tour, Team CCC.
For me, I think it was still really was that Andorra stage. It was just such an epic stage and everything was just crazy, lots of fans, and I really enjoyed that.
Probably when the doctor told me in the ambulance I can continue, so yeah, they were mostly against it, but he said on a strong course of antibiotics allow me to continue, and that I must say just being able to finish it next day was a big moment for me, which was stage 15, because it was incredibly hard.
Willie Smith, who featured in the episode with a quite remarkable interview a few nights ago of Team Katusha Alpecin.
And from there on, yeah, I just knew I was going to make it to Madrid. Basically, yeah, but it's been a super hard Grand Tour. I think, as everyone will tell you, most of the days we climbed more than 3,000 meters of climbing, and yeah, just to finish it as a South African is really an accomplishment in its own, I hope. yeah, especially, I mean, you know, the first 3 years I studied, I didn't really ever think of becoming a professional cyclist, and only riding in amateur teams and then ending up here, for me that's a big achievement, but perhaps for other people it's not, you know, so I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's almost good night from Madrid, but before we go and end our 2019 coverage of the Vuelta a España, and I go off for a meal and maybe one or two drinks, got a few thank yous to say, a lot of thank yous actually. First of all, I really want to say a huge thank you to Nick Schultz and James Knox, who at the start of the Vuelta agreed to keep an audio diary for us. There was a fairly loose commitment, we didn't ask them to send us in installments every day, but they did send in installments every day, and they were interesting and a real insight into their races, which is exactly what we wanted. And along the way, of course, we got to follow James's quite incredible journey through his, well, the first Grand Tour that he's finished, at least. If there's a bit of background noise here, I'm outside the Movistar bus, and there are a lot of Colombians here, and Nairo Quintana remains their hero. It's clear to see and hear. But yeah, big thanks to Nick Schultz and James Knox. I think people have really enjoyed listening to their thoughts at the end of each stage, and their efforts and their commitment is really very much appreciated. I want to say a big thanks as well to Stacey Snyder, who for the third Grand Tour made her beautiful handmade mugs and sold them for good causes, on this occasion the Bike Project and Andy's Man Club. Thank you, Stacey, not just for doing that and raising so much money for good causes. Oh, Nairo Quintana might be appearing any moment. But also for documenting the process so beautifully on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you'll find Stacey. And it's been a great experience being involved in that and collaborating with her on that project. Big thanks to our producers, Adam Bowie, John Mooney, Will Jones and Tom Wally, who do such great work on the nightly episodes and on the Kilometre Zeros. And I think we've been proud of the Kilometre Zeros we've produced at this Vuelta. I hope you've enjoyed them. And a big thanks to Hansgrohe for supporting our Kilometre Zero episodes at the Giro Tour and Vuelta this year. A huge thanks to Jonathan Rowe, who does so much work behind the scenes, even made a rare appearance on the podcast earlier on, if you were paying attention. But yeah, thanks to Jonathan. He's an enormous help to us and does a lot of his social media, manages the Friends scheme that we run, and he's the first line of the cycling podcast team. Big thanks also to David Luxton, who manages things for us with sponsors, advertisers and so on, and helps to keep us sane. Thank you, David. Thanks to Orla Shinawee, who's been a regular contributor to our Vuelta podcast, fitting in and around her other work with Eurosport. Very much appreciated, Orla. To Ithier Gomez for being the voice of our Vuelta coverage. Thanks, Itzy. Thanks to Massey Mass and 13 Senses for the music that we've used throughout our Vuelta coverage in both the regular episodes and the Kilometre Zeros. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa, Science and Sport, and all our episode sponsors. They help keep us on the road and we're extremely grateful. And finally, thank you to you, the listeners to the podcast, and a big thanks to those of you who've signed up as friends of the podcast. You help support us too, and you help us cover all three Grand Tours in the way that we do. Huge thank you to you. And that's all for the Grand Tour season for 2019. But the podcast doesn't stop. Coming up in the next week, we've got an episode of the cycling podcast Femina and a third episode of Service Course with Tom Wally and Kira McVitie. And this one's a cracker. I'm looking forward to listening to it myself. Then there are the World Championships, of course, in Harrogate, and we'll be producing extra episodes over the course of that week. So stay tuned for more details on that. And that's all from me, from Madrid. Thank you very much for being with us on this journey around Spain and into France briefly. We'll see you next year.